Attention, attention. If your box value is not all the way up right now, Houston, we have a problem. Over 10 hours of playing time. Bump box keep me up on my grind. Speakers so loud, I'ma stay up. Speakers so loud, you gon' wake up. I live like Major with my cookie pager. Bumping from my hip like an old school player. You definitely can hear my bump box over there. Come with a mic so you can hear me clear. Bluetooth and waterproof, up rock, red or blue. I got that limited Uncle Snoop, bumping through the roof. You don't got a bump box, you not bumping true. So if I was you, I'd hurry snag a few. Bumpbox.com, add to your cart so you can bump too. For the new and old school, retro, graffiti, flair, hey, you choose. Bumpbox for you in every mood.
Bumpin' no code, seen a lot, won't tell one soul. You know the streets make the heart turn cold. Thank God that I'm still on my toes. Still I go beast mode. Won't break, won't bend, won't fold. And from the bottom used to heat up the stove. Now we heating up streets like walls. Streets like walls.
Unbreakable, untainable. Made my first 100,000, shit was untrainable.
Gun chest uncut. Yeah, you know that's us. Where we only speak the real and the real rock with us. Where we motivate the people and politic on success. Oh no, we ain't DJ Khaled, but they swear we the best.
What's happening? It's Contrast Uncut. It's season 3, episode 50. It's the season finale, everybody. Man, big shout outs to Uncle Snoop's Army and Bobby D Presents. I appreciate you, brothers. It's your host, Zylo, a.k.a. DJ Juan Dollars, like I won some money. Today, ladies and gentlemen, you know I had to go big for the last episode of season 3. Today, we have a living legend, a truly dope special guest. He was born in the D, Detroit, Michigan. He's a mega-gifted musician, recording artist, producer, entrepreneur, and world-class businessman. He's a huge activist for diabetes and personally overcame some real health scares and you know, he has his own resilience of testimonies from that alone. This brother is music royalty. He has helped tremendously shine the light on brilliance of his mother and father's career in the music industry, having to overcome so much to restore the family name. This brother is an incredible light and amazing soul. His legacy and imprint on entertainment will transfer and translate for generations to come. If you don't know who I'm talking about, it's all good. We got all episode to chop it up and, you know, really discuss the history of MG3, you know, better known as Marvin Gaye III. How you doing, brother?
How you doing, man?
I'm blessed. You know, it's an honor every time I'm in front of you, whether it's on here or in person. It's just an honor. Your energy, even though it's through here, is just amazing. I get just incredible feelings whenever I speak to you.
Oh, that's great, man. You know, I have lots of love for you too, bro. You know, and all that you're doing.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. You know, I got to let you know from the beginning that time is the most finite thing we have on this earth. And I want to let you know that I appreciate your time greatly for coming on the show and you know, really just discussing things with my listeners and viewers.
Oh, well, that's great, man. Like I told you, there's no time better than this because, you know, I have nothing but time. You know, I've been in the house for about 6 months now and, you know, doing whatever I can do, you know. So, you know, I'm happy to help you and happy to, you know, be present, you know, on your show.
Thank you so much. Now, I got to let you know, Marvin, I got a quote for you. You know, let me know how this quote relates to you or if it doesn't, it's all good. The idea is I want you to talk about it.
Okay, go ahead.
There aren't enough people who care about the future. They are too busy worrying about today and what they can do to grab what they can grab now. Barry Gordy.
Well, so what do you want to know about that? What do you want my thoughts on that? Or
yeah, how does it relate to you? Because I know for you know my own personal experience that you don't settle for today. You don't think about what you can grab now. You are always on to the next move. Your mind is 24 to 72 hours, sometimes 6 months ahead.
Well, that's true. You know, what's happening today is fleeting. Today's going to be gone in a matter of hours. So, you know, if you plan ahead, you know, you can plan more in the schedule of those hours, you know, and most likely get more done. there's definitely too many people thinking about today and not thinking about tomorrow, as we can see during the times that we're in. You know, people walking around not wearing masks and stuff. You're not thinking about, you know, who they can infect or what their life's going to be like tomorrow if they're in the hospital, or, their jobs or whatever. You know, they're just thinking about how they feel right now and what they want to do right now, you know? So, I think it's really, you know, that's a really important saying that, you know, some people should give more thought to.
Absolutely. And, you know, it is powerful coming from your uncle because, you know, a lot of stuff he said has rolled down the hills and changed lives. And, you know, I feel like it relates to you because you implement that daily and yearly, year in, year out.
Well, I'm very fortunate to have come from a family of prophets and, you know, healers. And at the same time, you're very religious, you know, so I ascertain or you know, those qualities myself. You know, I'm not trying to brag about myself, but at the same time, you know, that is a true statement. So, you know, one has to be aware of, you know, the past, the present, and the future. You know, if they want to, you know, live a long, good, healthy life.
Yes, absolutely. So I want to ask you, you know, I want to go into pretty much your history. I want to know if the game chose you or did you choose the game?
The game chose me. But, you know, I didn't resist it. There were times when I was born into this. So, you know, it's like second nature, you know, and growing up, my family were really supportive in, you know, trying to see what makes you happy and finding out what makes you happy, because because this is what the family does as a music, you know, we're in music, doesn't mean that I have to be, or anyone, you know, any one of my kids or any, you know, the people that I hang out with, they have to be in music. So it's really about just, you know, exploring the boundaries and seeing what my options were. You know, I used to race motocross. I was like the number two motocross racer on the West Coast, you know, back in the day. Before, if I would have kept racing, I would have been the first black professional, you know, motocross racer. But, you know, some tragic incidents happened, you know, my dad's death being one of them, that, you know, changed the course of all that. But, you know, needless to say, you know, I had I still ride and I love motorcycles and motocross, you know, and I was really fortunate to be able to experience that. You know, I went to school to be a doctor. You know, I wanted to be an anesthesiologist. You know, through life's changes, you know, every road led to music.
Hey, that is astonishing because you had a sports background, you have an educational background, but through it all, the music industry kept on pulling you back in like, you know, this is for you. It doesn't matter if your voice is on something or if you're doing something behind the scenes to make everything work, from film to TV to just music. You found your way or really the game called you back. Like, hey, no, come on.
Well, the game wouldn't let me know. You know, that's the way I look at it. You know, it's not like I was trying to leave, but I was really, you know, I was doing quite well, like I said, in motocross. You know, I mean, in high school, I was making, you know, $100,000 a year, you know, just racing, you know, doing something I really love, you know. So when you're doing something you love, it's never work. You know, I'd ride like, you know, on the weekends, I'd ride like 8 hours a day, you know, if I wasn't racing on that day, you know, and I'd still, if I was racing, I'd still be riding up like 5 hours. So, you know, and during the week, I when I had time between school and whatever, I would ride as much as possible. So, you know, a couple, three, four hours a week, 5 hours a week, you know, was nothing.
So I want to go into like your first confirmation that, you know, the music, well, the entertainment industry is what you're supposed to do for your life. You had all these other things where it slowed you or progressed you in other ways. But, you know, I want to feel like, what was your first confirmation that, you know, entertainment is what you're supposed to do?
My first confirmation was when I signed my first record deal, you know, at RCA. And, you know, but it was short-lived because BMG had just bought RCA out. So the label shut down on the West Coast and they had to go through restructuring. So I basically got out of my contract and Capitol picked me right up. And I went over there and, you know, so that's you know, everything else before that was just, you know, messing around in the studio or whatever. And, you know, just seeing what could possibly be.
So, you know, you touched a little bit about some of the lows, because like right away, I can immediately tell that, you know, that transition, RCA being bought out, your contract being flimsy, like that was a low in the beginning. So like, I want to go into some of the highs and lows you faced in your career that you're willing to discuss.
Well, like you said, that was definitely a high, but then an immediate, you know, within months, I wouldn't say a low, but it was confusion, you know, and, you know, so I had to immediately figure out and find my way around, you know, and in my family, we, you know, they give you the opportunity to do things, but they leave it up to you to figure things out when they don't work out the way you want them to work out. So it's not like I can go crying to somebody, you know, saying, help me. You know, I did this all on my own. And even though Berry Gordy was my uncle, you know, as you notice, I said RCA and not Motown, because, you know, if you want to do something and you want the respect and stuff, then you have to do things, you know, on your own. And if you can make it happen, then you get all the respect in the world, you know. I went over to Capitol, and at the time that I went to Capitol, this is probably the lowest point. And I think about this a lot. You know, things that I could have possibly done differently. I had a really nice record deal, you know, a really nice record deal. And I flew all over the world, you know, from here to Europe, and worked with some of the best producers and recorded a fantastic album. Now, at the time that the album was about to be mixed, Nirvana was doing really well, or had done really well, and the new president of the label wanted all Nirvana stuff, so he basically shut down the whole A&R Black division. And I knew that, you know, well, everybody was worried, and there was a lot of rumors going around. I kept saying to myself, well, Hammer just sold 2 million albums. If he goes, then I got a problem, you know? And sure enough, months went by, and I, you know, we were just about to go and mix the album, you know, and we got word the Hammer got fired. And so, you know, I started getting worried, and I spoke to my representatives, you know, at the label, and they assured me that everything was okay. And a couple of them had gotten new contracts, you know, moving forward, you know. So I felt assured once again, but no more than a week later after that meeting, you know, everybody had disappeared. It was a ghost town. So I sat on the label. I didn't even get a release. I sat on the label for about 4 months. And I couldn't get in touch with anyone. And so eventually I went up in there, and like I said, it was a ghost town. Everybody was gone. You know, the offices were empty. They had, you could see where everybody had been, you know, the desks and everything were all clean. So everybody had been moved out, and I couldn't find anyone. So I eventually wound up in the law part of the, you know, where the lawyers are, the attorneys for the label, and I spoke to them, and they didn't even know who I was for some reason. So we did a search in the computer, and eventually I popped up, and I wanted to know what's going on. So, you know, and once they told me that the label was being restructured, you know, when I heard that word, I thought of RCA immediately, and I started to get a little worried. And so what happens is that, you know, I said, well, how long is this going to go on? They said, well, we don't know. We don't really have any information. And I'd already sat around for 4 months, you know, so I was like, well, can I get a release? You know? And so they're like, well, we don't handle any of the label business really, you know, but let me, and he goes, well, let me just look at something. And he looked up and he saw the budget for the album and everything. And when he looked at the numbers, he was like, there were no returns because the album hadn't been put out yet. So what happens is he said, well, due to the fact that this number is so high, and I know they're trying to cut corners right now, he said, I can probably help you get a release because you know, we're not, most likely not going to see this, you know, at this point, you know, for a while. And I don't think it's good, you know, it's going to be healthy for you to sit around, you know, when you can possibly do something with your career. So I called my manager, called my attorneys, and told them what was going on. And so they agreed. And they said, well, if you can get released, let's do it. And when we did it, Capitol would not let release any of the material so I can have a decent demo tape or anything, you know? So I couldn't, it was hard for me to shop another deal with no demo except for the one I did with RCA, which was about 5 years prior to that. And wasn't a representation of anything that I was doing at this point, you know? So it made it really difficult. You know, and the times, you know, the record business was changing a lot. So you couldn't get the kind of deal that, or I couldn't get the kind of deal that I would feel comfortable with, you know, without being a so-called slave or whatever. So I really just got back into, I decided to go back to college and get my degree. And I changed my AA to business and computer science, and that's what I got. You know, that's what I did. Yeah. And then I eventually had a kid. I have two boys now, but I had a son, and that changes when you, something like that changes the whole scope of things and what you're trying to do. And I decided, you know, it was no way to raise a family going out on the road, you know, 9 months out of the year, you know, or being gone. And that's what I would have had to do. And I wasn't, you know, I decided to do something else basically. So I went back to my love, started, you know, riding and racing motorcycles, you know, racing not professionally or anything like that, but just weekend racing, you know, just something to keep the mind off of, you know, other things, and get a kind of release that, you know, I needed. And, you know, trying to be a family man. So
from that transition into, you know, being fatherhood, you know, I definitely want to give you all the love and flowers of being a dedicated father and a dedicated husband. You know, that's huge. It's not easy to do in the industry, period. And you brought it up right away. You had to make that decision on what was going to be, you know, the longevity of what you want to do and get accomplished. And that's huge. And I got to make sure that I give you your flowers for that, because, you know, a lot of people make the wrong decisions in those moments. And, you know, it's important to that you embraced it and you gave it love. You are happy. That's the key to it.
Well, that's what you have to do. If you're going to make a decision as big as that, you know, one way or the other, if you're going to be all in, you're going to have to be all in with a positive mind, heart, and have some, you know, some happiness and love in your heart. Otherwise, it's not going to work out the way you want it to work out.
Facts. And so I gotta ask you, did that pretty much begin the slate of the vision of, you know, starting MG3 Entertainment?
No, it was several years later that I decided, you know, because I was to say disenchanted with the music industry, you know, it's speaking lightly. I was quite upset and I didn't feel defeated, but at the same time, I was really disappointed. You know, I couldn't possibly feel defeated because I made the decision myself to do something different as opposed to, you know, move on. But at the same time, you know, there's definitely, you know, a certain feeling you get when you spend 10 years of your life, you know, dedicated to doing something and, you know, it doesn't work out the way you want it to. So, you know, I like I said, I kept doing the things that I loved and, you know, I eventually fell back on my career. I had this, I worked at Motown. The record company for several years, you know, doing different things, you know, and our VP was one of them, or actually assistant to the VP. I'm not going to say VP, but I did a lot of the work there. And so I decided, okay, well, I can start my own label and do my own thing, you know, but because of the finance situation, I had my finances allocated in different areas. You know, it wasn't really feasibly possible for me to do that, you know, because it takes quite a bit of money to do an album, you know, studio times and merchandising and marketing and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I decided, okay, well, let me just put that, you know, let that sit and figure out exactly what I want to do. And, so that's when, after several years of doing, you know, various things, you know, to enhance my portfolio, and that meaning my money portfolio.
Right. That's important.
You know, making lucrative investments and stuff like that, you know, to get in a position that I needed to get in. I decided, okay, well, I'm going to do this musical play because that's something that's on my bucket list of things to do, and I had a good opportunity to do it at that time, so I went ahead and produced that.
And we're talking about Pride and Joy, right?
Actually, wrote and produced Pride and Joy, the Marvin Gaye musical.
Wow, that's amazing. And you know, I've done a lot of the backstory reading on it. It's so amazing, just the ability of the power of love and two powerful people and then just the struggle and the success of trying to make each other's lives go. And, you know, your mother was a very, very powerful woman. She did a lot of things that really changed the game and enhanced it, and your father as well. So it's amazing that you were able to put that into a screenplay.
Well, yeah, it didn't take much thought, but it took it. There's so much information that it took me a minute to figure out exactly what story I wanted to tell and how I wanted to tell it, and at the same time be truthful about everything, because that's one thing that, you know, in our family that they pretty much command you to be is truthful.
Yes.
So, and I know my dad, you know, the way he is, or the way he was, but want, you know, no matter what it is, you know, the truth to be told.
That's so important. I mean, one, integrity is the biggest thing, but two, to know that it's inspired and written from the true stories and, you know, testimonies, that is something that, you know, will help people get through so much, because there's just so much that your father's music was just about, like just so many different emotions and derivatives of where it was coming from and how it came back out to us to love and enjoy for decades and decades and decades. And, you know, I just love the fact that you're able to do that, number one. Number two, to go through the hurdles of getting, you know, clearances from Sony for some of the songs just to put in there. Like, you definitely, it wasn't an easy task.
No, I had to jump through a few hoops, and I'm not really the kind of person that jumps through hoops. You know,
you got a motorcycle for that.
No, not even on my motorcycle. You know, I don't think that, you know, if you have synergy and you have a conglomerate or a group of people that want to do something, they shouldn't make you jump through hoops in order to get things correct. You know, and that's pertaining to the deal or whatever. You know, I mean, if it's right, it's right. Just figure out how to make it happen. Don't try to, you know, squeeze me here and make me do this to get that. And, you know, it doesn't work that way with me.
No, and that's actually important to put out there, because great business and good business is how you treat a person and what you say and how you do it. And, you know, putting people through jumpers and risk of just trying to get what's right done is, you know, not, it's just a part of the reality of the entertainment industry, which is unfortunate. And I'm happy you're able to say, no, you know, you got to hold your ground so that you can get things done.
Yeah, well, the way I look at it, when you make a person do all that, it takes a lot of energy out of what, you know, it takes a lot of energy out of them. And if you're trying to, if you're on board with something that they're creating and you want to maximize it and you intend on profiting from it, then what you should do is to try to use that energy for that project, you know, not, you know, get this person all wound up and drained out from doing other things. So when it comes to time to do what you need them to do, you're not getting 100%.
I feel you. And, you know, I got to ask you, how much of your job is preparation and rehearsing for the work you've done in your career? Because I feel like, you know, you have a ton of preparation for everything you do. And I also feel like rehearsing is something that you don't mind doing so that it's right.
Well, practicing your craft is 90% of the battle. I'd say, you know, if you do that, then when it comes down to doing the actual recording or doing a tour or whatever, it's second nature, because you've already worked out a lot of your kinks and, you know, the things that might hold you back. So, I said, preparation, and that means rehearsing or doing whatever, you know, vocal lessons, whatever you have to do to get to the point, to get to the standard that you need to be or more, then you have to do that. You know, it's just like, even like racing motorcycle. You just don't go and race. You know, there's many hours of practicing and riding and doing things so you can figure out. You have to get one with your motorcycle. You have to, you know, understand how different terrain, you know, can affect you and what you're doing. I mean, a rock the size of a pea could end you, you know? So it just all depends on whatever you do. You have to prepare for it. You have to understand what you're doing and get as much knowledge as you can about what it is that you're doing and what you want the outcome to be.
Well, you know, I bet you can say this. You have put over 10,000 hours into a lot of the stuff that you do, and you're a master of your habit. An outlier is an understatement of what you are.
Well, 10,000 hours is, I've done much more than 10,000 hours. When it comes to writing, much more than 10,000 hours. And even recording and stuff, you know, I 10,000 hours really isn't that many hours if you look at it. You
know? That is so big, because so many people would look at that statement and not realize that that's what makes you a master. The minimal requirement is 10,000 hours. And you're like, you know, that's nothing. That's just something that's a part of the process.
Yeah, if you do it every day, you know, every day for years, I mean, 10,000 hours?
Right? You know, Marvin, the common denominator of my show is success. There are a lot of people from poverty-stricken neighborhoods with limited resources and opportunities to make their passion, gift, and dreams come true. For some, they make it right away. Others work at it till it happens. And you have a lot of people afraid of success. They have a fear of failure. And, you know, they live in a cul-de-sac mind frame and not building a bridge to success to obtain their goals and dreams. And, you know, it's important that the reason why my show surfaced, because, you know, I made mistakes and, you know, got scared, and, you know, certain things happened and I should have kept on pushing and striving. And then eventually I kept at it and success continued to knock on the door for me, where it became not such an uphill battle. It became so much a downhill battle because of all the work put in. And, you know, you're a huge testament. You're the reason why you're my season finale for number three, because, you know, you don't allow the excuse to rule you. You allow that excuse to be the reason why you got it done.
Yeah, well, there's excuses in everything you do, or people could have them. And I heard a saying a while back that I love so much, you know, excuses are like assholes. Everybody's got one.
Yes.
You know,
and Ernie used to say that all the time.
What's that?
Ernie used to say that all the time.
Yeah, you know, so, you know, it's a very true statement. And I don't, you know, excuses are just, you know, people trying to, I mean, there's an explanation for everything that can be acceptable. And excuses is basically for lack of a better word, a coward's way of saying why they didn't do it, you know, or why they didn't get the job done. You know, like I said, an explanation, you know, there's one for, you know, an acceptable one for anything. And, you know, but excuse means you just, you know, you just gave it up. You know, an explanation is, well, this is temporarily in my way, but, you know, this is the way I'm going to get around it. You know, so.
No, that's huge. That's huge. I'm going to go ahead and put a pause on the history and the music conversation. I'm going to dig into my three segments. I hope you get a joy out of this. One is a hot topic, and, you know, we've been facing this for many, many years. You faced it in the music industry early with just, you know, why am I forgetting my words? You face a lot of scrutiny from the beginning based upon not only the color of your skin, but the reaction of how people control what they can control. And, you know, in our society, police have a lot of control of what they do. And, you know, I feel like I have an awareness segment for number one, that awareness is key to anything. Knowledge is power, but when you use that knowledge, it's a superpower. And, you know, I feel like if we could have anyone that comes on the show talk about their police interactions, you know, that one, we can get a gateway to out of the situation and, you know, quickly and move on. And two, we can grow from this. And so my question to you is, when was the last time you were pulled over, and what's some advice you can give in the situation of being pulled over?
Well, it's been quite some time since I've been pulled over, but I will say that last time I got pulled over, I was basically profiled. And no matter what, how you're pulled over, the thing about it is you have to remember, first of all, that these people, you know, you don't know what kind of cop you're going to get until he rolls up, until he comes up to the window. He could be one that's, you know, stressed out from his, you know, home relationship, you know, or feeling pressure from work, or just one of those assholes, or just somebody that has a, you know, they have a grudge about something, you know, or you can get the cops that are really cool. I mean, I've met a lot of cops that are really cool. They're just people too. So right. Just like you have friends that, you know, have good days, have bad days, you know, in a cop position, every minute that they're out there, you know, that could be, you know, something can happen that, you know, they could be shot at or anything. You know, they have a target on them to a certain point, and even pulling people over, you know, they never know what you might do, you know. So I don't blame them to a certain degree, but there is a way to handle people and a way not to handle people. I will say that, you know. So I think that once you find out who you're dealing with, like I said, when they come up to a window, once they find out, you know, by just speaking to you, what kind of person you are, then you know, either they can ease up or whatever. And a lot of times they don't. They just stay aggressive and, you know, sometimes make bad decisions themselves. I when I get pulled over, or when I have gotten pulled over, I, you know, not only knowing the state of the nation, because I am black, and you know, that could be an issue in the first place, you know, I immediately go for the disarming feature, which is I present myself in a way that immediately lets them know, you know, I'm not a threat to them, and at the same time, you know, I'm just a person too. You know, and that really has to go along with your attitude. Even if they pulled you over, and you know they pulled you over for some bogus stuff, you know, you don't start the conversation by saying, "Man, what did you do? You know, why are you pulling me over?" And give an attitude, because that's not going to help them relax and get comfortable. You know, and want to put their gun away if they have it out. You know, if you come at them and you're being aggressive, that's only going to, you know, raise flags with them, you know, and, you know, not to be, you know, you want to answer their question that's clearly, and, you know, just, you know, right away as possible. You know, if you're taking too much time, you know, it makes them think of maybe you're trying to come up with the right answer. You know, like I said, it's all about the presentation. You know, you have to remember this person's got a lot of baggage on them coming to your window, no matter what, and you know they're concerned about them going home, and just like you're concerned about you going home, you know. So the sooner that you comply with what, as soon as you comply, you can get about your business, and so can they.
Yeah, the quicker, you
know, hopefully.
The quicker the interaction, the better. I mean, we get it in, you check your stuff, you give me a ticket, give me a warning, I'm going to have my day in court with you no matter what. Let's just get in, get out.
And even if you happen to get arrested, you know, during that whole process, it's always a better choice to never be combative. Just do what, you know, just do what they're asking you to do, you know, and get it over with so you can get your day in court or whatever. You know, being aggressive and all that stuff is only going to either get you beat down, you know, or whatever, you know. And I've had some cases, I've heard some friends where, you know, they pissed the cops off so bad that they left them, you know, in a holding tank for hours, you know, and just out, they'll go on another run before they come back and finish your paperwork, you know? So the bottom line is you want to make it, you know, as unpleasant as it can be, you know, as quick as possible. And, you know, so I try to keep things on a meaningless side and look at it as a business transaction, you know, instead of a personal transaction.
I love that answer. No one has ever said that on my show. He said, yeah, when I get pulled over, I think about it as a business transaction, not anything personal.
Yeah.
It's so powerful because it changes the dynamics of the way you think.
Yeah, and how you're going to present yourself and everything else.
Yes.
They have a job to do just like you have a job.
Thank you. Thank you, Marvin. You have definitely, number one, the testimonies were amazing. Number two, the advice I've got, that's something I've never heard before. And I'm blown away on that answer because that makes all the sense in the world. Because if you remove that negative energy of personal, you're going to get through the stuff as quickly as you can. And that's the whole point of it. Get through it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go ahead and put a transition into what we're doing. I got my next segment. It's my Trading Places segment. And you know, the idea is that we're gonna have a little fun, think a little bit. I'm gonna take two iconic people, swap their lives, and we're gonna talk about it. And for you, I got two wonderful women that are, you know, from the modeling background and acting background. And so I have Pamela Anderson trading places with Tyra Banks. And you know, my question to you is, number one is, will it work?
Well, let me get it straight here. When you say trading places, will it work? Give me an example of what you mean by that.
So you
and
think
because obviously they're both successful, and whatever they've done has worked for them. So I can't see, even if they traded places, how it wouldn't work for them still.
I love that. I love that. I want to know if you can see Tyra Banks as Pamela. So pretty much, can you see Tyra Banks as Baywatch? And, you know, can you see Pamela Anderson as, you know, America's Next Top Model host and selecting the next wave of models? Can you see any of that?
Absolutely. You know, those are two women that are dynamic. You know, they're gorgeous. They have a reputation for being, you know, excellent at what they do. You know, whether it's, you know, and they both are very good speakers. So I don't, you know, and they attract you in a certain way where, you know, getting audience participation or whatever is not a problem for them.
So can you think of at least one thing that'd be different if Tyra and Pamela switched? Like, do you think, you know, Tyra Banks would have put up with Tommy Lee? Or do you feel like Pamela would have done something, you know, on the deep end of what, and vice versa?
Well, the question is, when you say that, could Tommy Lee put up with Tyra? I mean, as much as I like Tommy Lee, I don't think that Tommy Lee, you know, not saying anything bad about Tyra, but saying that, I don't think that the communication, you know, and lifestyles are so different that
it would work.
It would work, you know, in the first place.
Fair enough. Okay. No, you handled that very well. You made me think very intellectually of the situation, other than two gorgeous women trading places.
Yeah, well. And with those two women, there's a lot going on and a lot of differences.
Yes. So we're going to go ahead and transition out of this into my next segment. It's my Impulse Q&A. And, you know, pretty much they're questions from like a fan perspective. If you don't like the question, it's all good. Just say I pass. And I got another one for you. The goal is you got to answer three questions no matter what. And are you ready?
Let's do it.
All right. Question number one. What is something that you recommend everyone tries at least once?
Having excellent sex. And if they knew that going into it that they had a person that was that was very compatible to them, you know, then I would recommend that they do the right thing.
Hey, that's right. Set the moon.
They won't be sorry about that.
It's so funny because you're saying let's get it on without saying let's get it on. Question number two. You're on a 10-hour flight. Where would you go and who would you have to talk to, dead or alive?
Say that one more time.
You're trapped on a 10-hour flight. Where would you go and who would you have to talk to, dead or alive?
Well, if I'm on a 10-hour flight, do I have a choice of who I can talk to?
Yeah, of course. If you want to fill up first class with all your family members or your friends, or if you want to go and say, I want to sit down with Donald Trump and see what the hell's his problem, I'm interested to see what your answer is.
Well, I would definitely like to bring a good majority of my friends and a few of my family, you know, if I wasn't married, then I would definitely like to bring some nice women with me. But my mom would say, don't bring sand to the beach, so it depends on where I was going. You know, but I would definitely, in this state of mind and where I am now in my life, I would definitely take my wife because she's a great and fun person to travel with. You know, she's my best friend and she's my wife.
Yeah.
So there's no need in going and thinking about anything else if you're married. Yeah. I don't have it on me. But yeah, I know what you mean.
Oh yeah, it's all good. Yes, sir. Now trust me, my answer is my wife every time. And you know what? She is my ride or die. She's there for everything. Like when I don't see something, she sees it, she'll say something. And, you know, that power of our dynamic duo is, you know, the reason why we're with our loved ones the way we are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Question number three. What is something you hate but you wish you loved?
Something I hate that I wish I loved. Oh, man. Well, the thing about it is, I mean, I don't really hate anything or anyone, because I try to put, you know, sometimes it's not about you. You know, it's about understanding what and why they are who they are.
Right.
You know,
I'll tell you my answer right now. I hate apple cider vinegar, but I wished I loved it so that I would enjoy all the damn properties that it holds.
Apple cider vinegar. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, no, that's for me. I hate apple cider vinegar, but I love that it's, you know, it's a anti-inflammatory. It helps you lose weight. It gives you energy. It does all these incredible things, but I hate the way it smells. I hate the way it tastes. And, you know, it's a battle, but I wish I loved it the way it tastes. I wish I loved the way it smelled, because just the ability of those components is, I don't have to drink caffeine because I got apple cider vinegar in me. I'm running like a machine.
Well, think of it this way. Do you like the way certain alcohol tasting it, whether it be scotch or Jägermeister or whatever, you know? Not everybody likes the way alcohol tastes, and certainly the way the smell is just alcohol, but they drink it.
They like the way it makes them feel.
Yeah. So you have to program yourself in that way. That just, you know, hey, you're not in it to taste it. You're not in it to smell it. You know, that's not what they made it for. You're in it for what it does for you. You know, and that's the way you have to look at that. You know, so it's neat be saying, I don't really like or hate anything, but when you put it to me like that, when you said apple cider vinegar, I can think of a few things, you know, that like I have an Australian wife, and she likes what do they call it? It's like for us, it's like peanut butter, but you know, it's how peanut butter is for us, but for them, it's something else. I forgot. What is it called? God. Anyway, it's nasty as all hell. And I don't hate anything, but that's not something that I would ever put on anything I would eat. You know, I'll just say I definitely dislike it.
Okay. Fair enough. I am not trying the peanut butter in Australia. Don't even bribe me.
No, it's not peanut butter. It's a yeast kind. If you see this in your household,
Vegemite. You might not want to eat it.
No, you definitely don't want to eat it. Let me tell you. That's what it looks like. I don't know if you can see that.
Oh.
Yeah. And she loves this stuff. But a lot of Europeans and people from Australia love this stuff. It's like I said, it's like peanut butter just for them, you know. And I can't stand it. But I don't hate anything. Hate is a strong word.
Oh, I love it. So, my brother, you notice that you survived my awareness segment, you survived my impulse Q&A, and you survived my trading places segment. And, you know, personally, I know that you're always working. So, you know, this is the time as a reward to promote. Let's promote what you're working on, what you're excited about coming out. You know, I know Corona's sort of slowed down the process of Pride and Joy, but, you know, let's talk to the viewers and let them know what you got going on.
Well, when you say that, Pride and Joy, the Marvin Gaye musical, will be back on the road, maybe in 2021. And then we're going to do a Broadway version. And hopefully, you know, depending on how it is over in Europe, a European production. I am coming out with a book. I don't know what the name of it will be yet, so I can't tell you. And that's about it for now.
Okay. No, that's huge. That's huge. Because, you know, that's one thing that I would have asked you is, you know, one, can we turn Pride and Joy and, you know, the Marvin Gaye musical into a movie? And the second thing I wanted to ask you is, when is the book coming? When are you going to work on your book? Because millions and millions of people would love to just dig into some of the thoughts and some of the ranges of emotions that you've held and you know, transferred through all the years.
Well, there's been a lot, but like I said, a book should be coming out within possibly 2022, you know.
Perfect.
I can't say that I'm going to start working on it during this pandemic, but, you know, I can't say that I won't either. You know, I've had some several negotiations with different publishing houses, and I have two that, you know, I picked to be the one of those two. So I still have to negotiate that contract and whatever.
Fair enough.
And write it and the whole bit. So, you know, we're looking at, you know, 2 years at least.
Okay, fair enough.
As far as doing the Marvin Gaye musical, I will most likely, I've had some conversations about doing filming the next production for Amazon, you know, or one of the streaming services, you know, but who knows? You know, a lot can happen between now and then.
Yes.
You know, so we'll just keep our fingers crossed and our eyes peeled.
Come on.
And yes. God on our side.
Amen. So I got to ask, because I know this is right around the corner, retirement. What is your goal long term, you know, before this next 5-10 years approaches?
Oh, I'm like my Uncle Barry. I'll never retire, really. You know, I'm sure I will switch courses. You know, some might call those careers. But, you know, as long as you're doing something, you know, you're always, you know, you're always feeling alive, you know, whether, you know, no matter what it is, you know, if you're doing something that you love and you're doing something that you feel is important, then you're always going to feel alive and you're not going to feel, you know, stagnant or whatever,
right.
You know, and that I won't be.
Come on. You know that this show is unique, is different. You know, I have segments because, you know, other guys say I have to have segments, but I don't do nothing like them. And so it's like, well, how do I keep that same energy and close out? My viewers knows it's coming, and I'm about to hit you with this, and here it goes. Do you have any questions for me?
Questions for you is, I think, I don't really have questions because I can see what you're doing, and I can appreciate it. And I holler at the Snoop Dogg, you know. And so, what's up, brother? And, you know, I'm really proud of you and how you're doing things. And, you know, I look forward to, you know, how this progresses.
Yes, sir.
I'm a firm supporter.
It's Contrast Uncut. It's season 3, episode 50. The big season finale. It's been an honor and a pleasure because I've had the incredible opportunity of just chopping it up and, you know, blessing all the viewers with Marvin Gaye III on here, everybody. Thank you. And I want to give a big shout out to Uncle Snoop's Army and Bobby D Presents. And hey. And you know, it's a blessing to have you on here. I can't say that enough. And just keep this plane of ideas and success stories moving forward.
Oh, you're welcome, man. Thank you very much. And it's been a pleasure, you know, to do this for you. And you know, I hope your public and people out there enjoy it.
Yeah.
Maybe learn something from it.
Come on, I learned a lot. You got me soaking game like I haven't been around you.
Yo, this is Marvin Gaye III, and you're tuned in to Contrast Uncut.
Hey! Chris.
cross, make him jump. Battle rapping for respect, my nigga, this ain't what you want. Can I kick it when I'm rhyming? Be a legend through Ebonics, was a sticker boy. Felt like sticky fingers played at Onyx. Can I live track 8? Feel like Jigga 96. Without a reasonable doubt, the album turned me into this. Should be always had dreams of being money making Mitch. Without jewelry on, hit a jail pose, take a flick. Feel like Pac and keep your head up. Biggie shooting juice. Coach is still alive, just let me prove. King, nigga.
Everything that you do, baby, I salute you. Every dream that came true, it's all 'cause of you. Everything that you do, baby, I salute you. Every dream that came true.
Right there you go. Another episode of Contrast Uncut. Make sure if you enjoyed it, you leave a comment below. You hit some like buttons. You hit some subscribe. You go ahead and hit share if you want to. Say something nice or say something you don't want to say at all. You're not going to hurt my feelings.